My name is Nick Gurnoff and I'm a member of this committee.
Chantal King,
member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Agnes Pack, I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Paul Masumu, one of the parliamentary members.
Good morning, everyone. I am Buyani Kole. I'm the assistant parliamentary liaison officer. During the research, there was a lot of things that happened. We went to the launch of the SKA, which was led you to congratulate him. Content and resources allocated for us to continue, but he was really taken aback and very excited at the launch. Without much waste of time, let's start with yourself on the presentation.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I will be delivering a presentation, of course, not that Adam and the rest of the delegation will also contribute. We've just been joined by one of our officials as well, Ms. Mante Chava, who is our Chief Director of the Commission of the Just Green. Indeed, Honourable Chair, Members, of course, the SKA project needs no introduction to this committee, and we're certainly honoured to have the committee at the launch of the Meerkat a few weeks ago. We thought it would be appropriate, the Department and the Director General, to also now use this opportunity to brief the members on the progress of the international partnership, the international cooperation which underpins the SKA project, specifically in anticipation of the signature in the next few months of an international agreement called the Convention to Establish the Square Kilometre Array Observatory. Not least, of course, is it appropriate to ensure the members of this committee is fully kept informed of the progress of the SKA project at an international level. But once that agreement is signed, it will completely reflect on the purpose of the convention, then provide the community with a short overview of the actual content of the convention and the associated protocols, and then just looking towards the future as a process towards signature and notification. And that is then to describe how the international partnership will advance. So in a nutshell, the purpose of the convention is to establish a new international organization or an intergovernmental organization, an IGO if they are referred, that's an organization established in the international law, and an instrument which will govern the constitutional of course, we have Meerkat, which has been launched and is operational, but that's also the South African instrument, as we call it, the precursor to the SKA. The global phase is the system, which is referred to as the reconstruction or the design phase. So when the full SKA is started, reconstructed, operated, it was deemed appropriate to have a new mechanism. And that's why this international organization will be established. The honorable members may just wonder how is the project, the international project, currently governed. That is through a company which has been established in the United Kingdom. Its headquarters is in Manchester. The honorable members may recall that at the launch of the Meerkat, the Director General, the members of the board, directors of the company were also present at the board. So our director general, Dr. Corner Barker, is the voting director of the company, and Dr. Adams, the scientific director, second director. And it's actually the National Research Foundation, NRA, which is the parent organization of the Vegas Observatory, which is the member of. However, it was thought that while that phase, that governance model was appropriate and useful for the early phase of the SKA project, they needed a more robust and comprehensive governance model for the construction of the project. And as I said, the SKA project is not subject to the legal obligation by the Scottish and international law. That is notably necessary because it's only by having an international organization that the different elements of the SKA will be able to report the right privileges and immunities to support the implementation of the project. And most notably, for example, the tax exemption of direct taxes. And we will reflect on that a bit later. Also very crucial, if the governance of the international project was to a legal entity established in a specific country, that would mean the project would be subject to the national laws and of that specific country. So that would mean this instance the United Kingdom. Until a few years ago, we were stated that the laws of the European Union, which we're going to apply, but of course now we know that the United Kingdom will exit the European Union. But it was very important for the project to have the flexibility to design the policies and the rules which was best suited for the successful execution of the project. And that can only be established by having an organization established under international law. And of course, by having an intergovernmental agreement, it means this is a treaty, a convention, which governments will sign, and it means therefore the commitment to the project, including the financial commitment, is at the highest level, as opposed to individual organizations which will make that commitment. It is not uncommon for large-scale science projects to establish these intergovernmental organizations. The honorable members are undoubtedly familiar with the European Organization for Nuclear Research, commonly referred to as CERN, which has been the birthplace of many a Nobel Prize in physics and other very important discoveries. It was also there where the internet, in a sense, was created. There are others, such as the International Thermonuclear Experimental Reactor, or ITER, the famous fusion project which comes from the Cold War. So there are precedents for governments wishing to embark on these large-scale science projects to establish intergovernmental organizations. What makes the SKA Observatory and that is what this new organization will be called. However unique, it's for the first time that a new international organization focused on science will be established, which will comprise membership of Africa, the Americas, Asia, Australasia, and Europe. Therefore, truly a global partnership, and one, of course, of which we're very proud and which Africa plays a leading role. So having reflected on the purpose of the convention, then just to give a brief overview, as I said, there's the main convention text, and we have provided honorable members with draft copies. An integral part of the convention are two protocols, one dealing with the privileges and immunities which will be established, and then with the so-called financial protocol, which sets out the principles of the financial management of the partnership. I think very important to state up front, and the honorable members would have seen this having looked at the draft text, that the convention doesn't deal with any details of any policies, such as, for example, intellectual property or procurement. It just sketches the very high-level principles. Same with regard to financial and human resources. Those details will be captured in another set of documents. In the parlance of the SKA partnership, the Tier 2 documents, because these will be documents which will only be approved by the Council of the SKA Observatory. The Council will be the highest decision-making organization once this new international organization is established. And that is because it is all international lawyers and senior public servants will advise that it's not very wise to embed two specific details in an international convention. Those are typical instruments which should be at a high level and just sketch a broad framework. So what a convention really does, it creates the mechanisms for the detailed decisions to be taken. I think also very important is that the convention itself and the act of signing the convention does not in its own right incur any funding commitments for any of the signatories. So it's only the future council, the decision-making body of the observatory, which will make the decision on the funding and construction of the first phase of the SKA and the funding commitments that the various governments will have. So that will happen through a separate negotiating process. Also, and I think that's specifically relevant also for the committee, is that the details which pertain to specific individual countries, the so-called host countries, there are three of them, South Africa and Australia, and the honorable members will recall that the frequency of the SKA is low frequency, and of course the United Kingdom, the headquarters, those details which pertain to the rights and responsibilities related to the hosting, that's going to be captured in separate hosting agreements, which will still be concluded in the future between the different governments and the IGO. So in the convention, the honorable members would have seen it sets out the purpose of the SKO, and that is to pursue global partnership in radio astronomy and specifically to advance the SKA project. It defines what membership entails. Because this is an intergovernmental organization, it's only governments or international organizations which have personality under international law which can actually be a member of the SKA. Observatory, but the SKA Observatory can have other methods of cooperation with other entities. It defines what the roles of the specific organs are. I've already spoken about the Council. This will be the decision-making body of the Observatory. A Director General will be appointed, which will be the Senior Office Bearer of the Observatory. And then it sets out high-level principles with regard to finance, intellectual property, human and all it really does is to say that our observatory will adopt detailed policies in this regard. I mean, it sets forth the principles how these policies will be adopted and amended. And then typically for any international convention, it deals with provisions, for example, with regard to dispute settlement. Of course, in an international partnership, the first principle is to try and resolve disputes through consensus and through amicably, but there are provisions, for example, for disputes to be referred to the International Forum of Arbitration, which is the standard procedure in this regard. It deals with aspects on how to withdraw from the convention, how the convention could be amended, how it will enter into force, and indeed terminated. And I'll say a bit more later on how it will enter into force. So the privileges and immunities protocol, these are typical privileges and immunities which the honorable members should expect from international organization established in the country. So same visas, for example, granted to the United Nations offices located in South Africa. I think the principle to emphasize here is these privileges and immunities are only extended when it pertains to the official purposes of the organization. So it is not a license for the organization to behave in any manner as it deems fit. Over the years, the trend in international law has been to significantly scale down on these privileges and immunities, and they only now pertain to aspects which are really essential for the successful execution of the international cooperation. So this is immunity from legal process, but immunity from legal process only when it pertains to the official business of the project. So if the Director General does something in his private capacity which incurs a legal responsibility, has to be accountable for that. Same with inviolability of premises, the exemption of direct taxation, customs and indirect taxes. This is very important because there will be a cross-border movement of equipment for the telescope and the privileges and immunities of staff and representatives. And as I said, this only pertains to the official business of the project. And all governments will extend this to the project. I think to emphasize up front here is that our Department of International Relations and Cooperation, DIRCO, played a very crucial role in the design and drafting of this protocol. So from a South African perspective, this protocol is fully compliant with our rules in terms of what we offer international organizations. The financial protocol, this sets out the financial management principles, specifically for something which is called the funding schedule, which if we cast our mind into the future, that when the future council will approve the start of construction of the first phase of SDA, there will be a schedule which will say that South Africa, the United Kingdom, Australia, Italy, and other countries will pay this percentage of costs. So how this schedule will be developed, the high-level principles are set out in the protocol, including the principles for project participation, because only those countries who will participate in the specific phases of the project will contribute to those funding schedules. It governs the approval of budgets, voting required, and so forth. A note to take for us as a host country, it has a special provision whereby the host countries will be credited for the precursor investments. The honorable members will recall that a near cut is what right now is a South African instrument, funded by South Africa, operated by South Africa. But at some stage in the future, it's going to be integrated with the global SKA, and then South Africa will receive a credit for that investment. So that principle is captured in the financial protocol, and it also sets out the principles under which this organization can take loans and incur liabilities that's necessary for the execution of the project. Then just to proceed to the negotiation phase, the following countries participated in the negotiations and then will intend to sign the convention: Australia, China, India, Italy, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Portugal, South Africa, Sweden, and the United Kingdom. And there were also official delegations from Canada, Germany, and Spain observing the process, having a strong interest in the project. I think I should also state up front that the convention will always be open to accession to any new government or new country who wants to join the project. So these are just the founding members of the observatory and those who have negotiated and will be the first signatories. The basis of this negotiation was the letter of intent signed by all the participating governments already now as long ago as 2014. The presidency of the negotiations, in other words, the country which facilitated and chaired this process was Italy, and specifically the Italian Ministry of Foreign Affairs. They were asked by the other governments to lead this process. We had the South African delegation comprised officials of the Department of Science and Technology, of DIRCO, and then of course, very crucially, also our state law advisors, and specifically our experts in international law. The slide has been shown, but also SARAO, the South African Radio Astronomy Observatory, and people like Dr. Blady also played a crucial role in supporting the delegation. There have been four formal negotiation rounds and significant work also between the different sessions, notably by a task force, which, and I think that's a sign of the standing of South Africa in the project, which the other delegation has asked South Africa to chair. So where we are with the negotiations. This has now been concluded at a technical level by the senior officials, and the heads of delegations have initialed the text. All initialing means it's not a legally binding act. It means that we have agreed that these are drafts as they stand today, and the different governments are all now starting the process to get a national approval, legal and political, for signature of the convention. And in South Africa, ultimately, this will mean a presidential act, a presidential minute, which will grant the authority to the Minister of Science and Technology to sign the convention. That will not happen until probably to December 2018. The Italian presidency will have prerogative to convene the ceremony for the signing of the convention. But obviously the department is now busy with the process to ensure due process for approval and signature of the convention. Once the convention is signed, it will only enter into force according to the principles of the convention when a minimum of 5 countries have completed their ratification according to the national procedures. And those 5 should imperatively include the 3 hosts, South Africa, United Kingdom, and Australia. So if we anticipate at the end of 2018 signature, it means that probably, in all likelihood, ratification for the minimum of 5 will take a good year. And that means that the convention will not enter into force 2019, and probably the first council meeting will not be convened at the beginning of 2020. That's a sort of a best case, not the idealistic, but a best case scenario. What is strategically important for South Africa, of course, is that we embark as soon as possible, maintain the momentum of the project on the construction of the SKA. That's in our strategic interest. So for the convention to be signed and enter into force to enable the global project to advance is very important for our government, and we'll be working towards that objective. Just to further reflect then in what will unfold during the coming months. So when the convention is signed, as I said, there will probably be a period of at least a year during which the ratification will take place. The governments who have signed will then establish a structure called the Council Preparatory Task Force, which will prepare that first council meeting. It will critically undertake the funding schedule, the negotiation of the funding schedule I referred to. It will prepare the various crucial policy documents, rules and regulations, and also engage with new members and associate members who may not have signed but want to join the new observatory as soon as possible. And it will also oversee the transition from the company in the UK to the new IGO. And this company in the UK is staff employed, some of which will transit into the new organization. So it is not that upon signature there will be no engagement at a policy level. There will be quite a period of intense work happening in the year 2019. So that when the first council meet, at its first meeting, it will have a whole range of documents, ideally, which can be approved and for the project to progress, because that's the ambition which drives this project ultimately, of course, is to build and operate the SPA. So that preparatory work will be very crucial, but it's of course, I have to emphasize that none of that work will be binding. It's only the council when legally constituted which will make the final decisions. So on the line with that, what we have sought to do was to provide you with first of all the purpose of the convention, why it was important to embark on its negotiations. Secondly, to provide you with insight into the draft text as they currently stand, and then just share some information on the way the governance of the global partnership is likely to unfold during the coming months. I think, as I said earlier, and the Honourable Chair also reflected on that the launch of the Meerkat not only raised significant interest here in South Africa, but also globally. The famous picture of the centre of the motorway is really the global coverage. The Honourable Members may have seen the picture of our President, ex-President Ramaphosa, and Xi Jinping of China in front of that picture during the Chinese state visit. So there's significant global interest and support for the project moving forward. And I think it's something that South Africans can be proud of, is that we are really playing a central and crucial role to advance this project from a technical, scientific aspect, could hear. Obviously, the delegation here is at disposal of all more members to answer any questions and provide further information as it's going to be required.
Thank you very much.
No, I think this is a pretty good thing. This is a point. The other aspect where I think is being extremely strong in technical development, even on both fronts today, is the international relations front, where this has been driven by Don Edwin Lark, and actually seen yourself a month or two back.
Funding schedule will be different for each country. Now my question is, that fair? So you know, if one country is contributing 30% of SKA observer team, but they have one vote. Now many of the votes I see must be unanimous, and it must be, you cannot take a vote with a simple majority, it must be two-thirds. That's one question. And then also, can we perhaps see the funding schedule? And then secondly, the office of the DG, where will that be? Will it be in Manchester or will it be in South Africa? And then obviously it will not be tabled in Parliament, in this Parliament. Maybe the sixth Parliament will deal with that. This is just for notification.
Honourable King.
Thank you.
Morning once again, everyone, and thanks for the presentation. I read through the documents, which was fine. My concern is when we look at how long it's going to take to get a presidential minute, is there any indication being given to you if there is a move on the presidential minutes and cabinet approval in this regard, given that we need to move ahead very fast? And then also, the formal approval to construct your SKA 1, there is strategic interest for us. What will the dilemma be should this decision not be, the ratification not be completed by 2019, and it goes beyond that, what will be our financial loss to it? And then to follow up what Honorable Kurnoff said, on the funding schedule. Also read that funding will be on a pro rata basis, which means the use of the SKAO instruments and stuff will be based on that pro rata basis. Also coming down to the fact that where does that then leave South Africa regarding our funding ability on that schedule? Thanks.
Very much. I think the concern is whether we'll be able to finish it. We've started this, and if it goes to the sixth parliament, we'd be like stuck from scratch. We have to understand and all those kind of things. When do you think the whole process is our role? In ensuring that it's tabled, because you know, after the next recess, it's actually now campaigning, so there's not much time to look at other issues and current issues like this one.
I will thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, for those very pertinent questions. I will respond to them and then also ask my Adam of the contribute. But I have to start with the process perspective. We have consistently keep Cabinet informed of the progress of the project in order, including the preparation of the international treaty documents. State law advisors have been intimately involved in the process, so we are very confident that we will secure the presidential minute. Also, in the time required. I mean, the earliest the convention could be signed, the indication we have from Rome is in the second half of November, it will probably be in December. So that's more than enough time for us to get a presidential minute, and we're on the cabinet schedule with that memorandum. Of course, the honourable members then point very pertinently to the process of processing through Parliament, given that we are facing elections. Of course, we cannot table it for ratification and let it decide. And that is a process which is outside of South Africa's exclusive control. Anecdotally, I could also mention that this is a concern which is very pertinent in the United Kingdom, given the amount of legislative work the UK Parliament is facing with Brexit. And the UK, more than anyone else, has been pushing for early signature because it also is worried that ratification will get caught up in the Brexit dynamic. We are not alone in facing elections next year. Also, Australia is facing elections. They may face elections even sooner. I think all members will probably follow the political developments in Australia. We have just had, again, another change of Prime Minister. So what all that we will do, and working very closely, Honourable Members, with you, if you are here, and your successors, if that be the case, I think drawing also on the significant goodwill and support for this project, we really have from all South Africans, and to advance this through the process as soon as possible. We know there's a process which has to be followed. So that would be we can only work within the process as fast as possible. But then I think the Honourable Member also asked a question in terms of the risk. So there is, first of all, in terms of financial risk, Meerkat is constructed and budgeted for by the South African government. So Meerkat will continue to do science during this period. I think the big risk is that we do not delay the momentum towards going towards the global project. And the current global partnership has been quite proactive in reflecting on this. There are, for example, and Dr. Adam might perhaps elaborate on this, but also display the initiatives to bridge this phase between completion of the precursor, the start of the global construction, with something called the early production array in the scale of these terminologies. So in order to ensure we keep on moving, I think the success of Meerkat and its scientific success will only contribute to raise global interest in the project. But it's a policy challenge all governments face. And it's one which South Africa, because of the foresight our government had to invest in Meerkat, is in a very strong position to respond to. At this stage, I think what can really be done is just to ensure that we continue to build the political support for the project in all governments. SKA was on the agenda yesterday when our president met the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Prime Minister Theresa May, because we all have to share in the project. But of course, we have to respect the political and parliamentary calendar and work with within that. If I could perhaps then just reflect on the funding schedule and the return investment. And Honourable Kernoff is indeed correct to indicate that most of the decisions will be one country, one vote. That's because that's the principle how these government organisations work. But ideally, for this type of partnership, most decisions should be taken by consensus. I think the crucial provision here, however, is that as the host countries of the actual infrastructure those countries do have quite a strategic role in able to take to orientate the project. In the financial protocol, it is, and the federal members indeed noticed that, foreseen that crucial decisions, such as, for example, the approval of budgets, that would have to be by a double majority. So it's not only one country, one vote, but also weighted voting, which will be proportional to countries' funding commitments. So the funding schedule for the government exists yet. There are indicative documents which indicate what countries' likely contributions will be. These contributions, I should state, will be negotiated as part of a process. So there is not a specific formula to say GDP informs so much of the funding contribution. It is, however, agreed, not in any binding manner, but informally, that the host countries will pay something which is, in all projects of this kind, referred to something called the host premium, whereby the host, because they stand to benefit most of the project, because really the most of the money will be spent here, pay a premium on what they normally would pay. So that's an accepted principle, that the host countries will pay a host premium. The rest of the countries will negotiate, and that would have to be agreed by everyone what their contribution will be. And of course, I think one of the honorable members stated that the return on investment will be proportioned to your contribution. So in terms of access to the instrument, but also very importantly, in so-called industrial return on investment. That's one of the reasons this organization was also established, so that the future procurement policy of the project can enable something which is called fair work return, which means that the governments will see a return on investment for the money they invest in the project in terms of contracts being awarded to their industries and SMEs. And that's, of course, very crucial for our government as well, because we want to use this project to build capacity and ensure that the benefits go to those that will be doing the infrastructure work in the Northern Cape, but also help us to build a high technology enterprise sector. In terms of the return on investment, from a scientific perspective, and again, I'll ask the colleagues from the observatory to perhaps speak to you in more detail, but that's really indicative. It's not very strict that if you pay 5% of the cost, you will only have 5%, because science doesn't really work like that anymore. I mean, why, honorable member, why does it actually, one of the main reasons this principle is there is scientists, in an ideal world, they would like to embrace a principle which they sometimes refer to as open skies. So everyone should just have access. But of course, from government's point of view, if we do that, other governments may not want to pay. So we have to limit access to the instrument to the scientific community of the governments who actually invest in the project. So this sort of pro rata return will be managed at a strategic level, but it's not an absolute form. I think from a South African perspective, of course, Dr. Adam is not only the head of the observatory, but he's also our former director general. And I think one of the strategic decisions we've made as a government now many years ago, that not only do we want to host the FKA, help design and build it, but also use it. So there's been a concerted investment in human capital in South African astronomy, so that we will have the astronomy community to use the instrument. I think from and we see that from here, Kate Tetsa, and we are, I think, well assured that our, from a science point of view, we will be in a primary position to use the instrument. In terms of, Honorable Colonel asked about the Director General will be physically located in Manchester. That's where the headquarters are, but they will be present in South Africa and Australia. But the administrators that is part of the design of this global partnership. I think there's a lot of talk today about something people like to refer to as science diplomacy, and SKA is a good example of how this works. It's really a distributed project, but I think from a South African perspective, the fact that the headquarters are in Manchester, which is really an administrative seat, doesn't really impact on our strategic participation and benefits from the project. I spoke to most of the issues that you were talking about.
Maybe just to elaborate.
May
on
I just ask if you could cover the agriculture and
just because we are sure of where the UK is in relation to speeding up the ratification of the president. You know, we have an idea of the other countries, how far they are, if we are prioritizing it or if there are other issues.
Obviously, the project is politically most visible in the host countries. That's where, so I think the political focus is unrivaled with regard to South Africa and Australia. The United Kingdom views hosting as the SKA very much as an integral part of its strategy for the fourth industrial revolution and big data technology and things like that. So it has high level political support there. I think what has been encouraging is the strong support and visibility we've seen in China, and but also the host. That's why we deliberately during the SKA, during the BRICS summit, and the Chinese state that used that to again raise the profile of the project. There's probably more work required, and working with DERPCO, we are undertaking that to raise awareness and build support in the likes of the Netherlands, in the likes of Italy, for example, New Zealand specifically, we are trying to the required support. So there are various levels of support. In terms of the signature, it is not required that all countries sign at the same stage. I think what's very critical, honourable members will recall that requirement of ET+2. So at this stage, according to the maps, the likely scenario would be, for those that will move quickest, would be the three hosts, obviously. Then Italy and specifically Portugal, where there's extremely strong support, largely as a result of the diplomatic work undertaken by the Honourable Naledi Pandor, our former minister, who built a very strong relationship with the Portuguese minister and convinced him of the interest of this project. So Portugal is ready to really expedite. And then we are investing significantly with specifically China, who is a really strategic partner for the project also from an industrial perspective. So it will require a lot of effort. We have to, as I say, vigilant and anticipate developments, but we are cautiously optimistic to ensure that if perhaps not completed application by late 2019, early in 2020.
Thank you,
Jack.
I think you covered pretty much everything. Just to say that sort of just the fair work between the construction and the operations as well. And that's really where South Africa and Australia can benefit most. Just from a practical perspective, it's most of the operations funding. And that's calculated roughly to be about 10% of the capital funding. So that if the capital comes to 700 million euros, that would mean 70 million euros roughly would come back into Australia and South Africa roughly in equal proportions each year. And so that's also something we shouldn't forget about, because there's a kind of an annual contribution to the economy in the form of wages of the operation staff, local contractors, maintenance people, etc. I'm not sure, Don, whether you answered the question. I may have missed it. Where will the DG sit? The DG will sit in the UK. Okay. And there'll be, and this is also under discussion, there'll be a site head, an in-country head for both South Africa and Australia, reporting to the DG in Manchester. And the exact model for the operations, that's still under discussion as well, but it's likely to be some kind of joint venture between the host countries and the centre. With respect to the science, as Don points out, it's very hard to subdivide science on a national basis. Even if we look at the Meerkat, which does actually have an open skies policy, what you find is that there will be a principal investigator who might be a German or be British or whatever. But in that team, there will be a significant number of South Africans. And I guess the five questions on face is when you look at deciding on a policy, is it better for South African more junior scientists to be in a team that's led by a South African or by a foreigner who might well win a Nobel Prize? So that does South African science benefit more by being led by a South African or by being led by somebody who could pull the whole team forward to a global standard? And that's, I guess, a kind of policy question for us, sort of how do you get the best bang for your buck, and then make up inside it to err on the side of open skies. Partly because we didn't have at that stage when we decided on those projects enough local radio astronomers to lead all the projects. And that, of course, might have changed given the progress that we made over the last decade. But I guess there'd be a sort of a waiting policy where, you know, when we go out and we have a call for proposals for the rest of the MEERKAT time, observing time at the end of this year, what we'll probably do is put a waiting in so that even if the team is led by a foreign person, foreign principal investigator, their proposal is advantaged by having more South Africans on it. So you'd manage it like that rather than decreeing that it's South Africa. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. I'm just curious, major companies I'm missing, but maybe you can say there is, you know, connected, you are connecting with them and there is interest shown by them. But, you know, France, United States, the rest of Africa, South Korea, Japan, Russia, you know, is there some sort of interest coming from those countries?
The answer is, the first answer is yes from all of those countries, and I will say a few more words on that, and I'm interested to speak to those details during the presentation, and also to, of course, emphasize that the SKA will be implemented in several phases. We often thought that that the full SKA will one day certainly include the United States. There's very strong interest in the SKA in the United States from a scientific perspective. Indeed, in the early years of the SKA, the United States radio astronomy community were very crucial contributors to the way the project evolved. One of the reasons why right now the SKA is the United States is not participating in these processes is that there's something called the Decadal Plan, which the National Science Foundation, the equivalent of the NRF in the U.S., has, where it prioritizes its investments. And in the last version of this plan, the SKA, several years ago, and was not prioritized. It decided to focus on other instruments. But there's regular and active engagement with specifically an institution called the National Radio Astronomy Observatory, which is the equivalent of SARO in the United States, as a technical level. So, as this is a long-term project with time, for the scale of the full SKA, it generally will seem that the United States will participate. And I could mention almost sort of anecdotally that even the convention itself was written with future participation in the United States in mind, because the United States does not typically commit to international conventions and so forth. So that's why the convention also has the flexibility for cooperation agreements to conclude between the future international organization and the national government. So that was with the future participation of the United States in mind. The local U.S. embassy follows the project extremely closely. As the honorable members would know, we've not had a U.S. ambassador for 2 years, but the former ambassador, Ambassador Gaspar, is a very strong supporter of the project. He has notably made available some Fulbright scholarships to support exchanges in the field of big data. The current charge d'affaires was hosted by Dr. Adam at the site earlier in the year. So from a political perspective, I think what is very interesting also to see is how the project grows, is that at the political level, those governments not involved are worried that they may be missing out. So the United States is long-term, but there's regular engagement. France, the organization called the CNRS, which is the scientific organization where the SKA is being driven from, is now actually a member of the company. Just exceeded added to a member of the Alpha Company. And the French government has included SKA on its roadmap for large-scale research and infrastructure investment. So France is typically an example of a country we anticipate. They will certainly not sign the convention, but once the convention is signed and the observatory is established, new countries can become members, can join. Like Democratic South Africa joined existing international organizations post-1994. So we were quite confident that France will be one of the first members to join the organization. They're a bit behind, also for internal reasons in terms of the sort of political awareness. That's why they're not a signatory. Ongoing, regular ongoing cooperation with Japan and Korea. There was indeed a Japanese observer at the launch of the MIRCAT, who sits as an observer on the current board. The same with Korea. So there's a significant global outreach effort. Because the full vision of the SKA 1, well, the thumb stuck, but probably only for 10 or 15% of what a full SKA one day will be when we get to 2030 or beyond. I think Donald Member also asked about the rest of other African countries. I think the first principle to state is that this is a truly global partnership. So any country can at any time apply to join. Of course, it is foreseen that during the latter phases of the SKA, stations of the limit frequency array will be in the likes of Botswana, Namibia, as far west as Ghana, east of Mauritius, Madagascar, and so forth. So those countries, for the moment, are participating really through South Africa. South Africa coordinates a process which we call the SKA Africa Partnership. We'll have the next ministerial meeting of the African SKA partner countries in October here in South Africa. And as we then start with the design of the phases where these countries will host stations of the SKA, there will be a discussion on the governance of how they will always have the prerogative to join the observatory as members or their own right. If, for specific reasons, that's not the option, they will probably sign a separate agreement with South Africa, and South Africa will, in a sense, be accountable for their hosting aspects to the international partnership. But we very much the similar type of briefing which we've delivered here to the honorable members, we will deliver in October also to our partner countries to praise them.
I think one country missed on was Germany.
And
there are ongoing discussions with the Germans. And I was in fact the last week to take up discussions with them. So, Japan and South Korea are official observers, but in instance, but, it's not unusual for America to even look at their position. They're not members of CERN, for example. They have their own quantum physics laboratory, Fermilab. So they tend to take, I suppose you might say that it's easier if you've got the money to do something on their own. They're members of ITSA. They may well come into this, but they'll take it on their own terms.
Thank you.
Chair, I think what Donald alluded to also is our partnership engagement with the African partner countries. Australia is in fact one of the programs of Australia is to assist the establishment of radio infrastructure in our African partner countries, and that's not just physical infrastructure, such as radio telescopes, but also human capital development programs, etc. And so there's been strong participation by various African scientists and engineers within various activities for Australia. Last year we attended the launch of the Ghanaian Radio Astronomy Observatory in August, and we did the finalising various second engineering phases on that, and working with our colleagues in Ghana, and that's been very successful.
During the launch, Kenya seemed to want to be a stronger partner, African partner. They actually want to surpass Namibia. So I think very keen on wanting to go back and really push to be the next,
In indeed, Honourable Chair, Honourable Amina Mohammed, the Minister of Education, Science and Technology, was present, and we are really working with Kenya not only on radio astronomy but on a comprehensive science and technology partnership. So it's one of our stronger partners for bilateral cooperation. They, for example, have someone at the Kenyan High Commission in Pretoria specifically looking at education, science and technology. A good example of the way they focus, they see as part of their bilateral cooperation. So we'll certainly be working very actively with Kenya to realize that.
Honourable member?
Yes.
Thank you very much for the presentation and clarification of the question from members and some concerns. Honourable Members, maybe on the introduction, were any comments from the staff? The purpose of the show. The delegation. Choose the Republic of Korea. So we change toilet to floor, and the order is that with the toilet in Korea, the best toilet in Asia. Maybe let's do this then. Let's we can send it to Shana, that one, and then look at that report and this one and incorporate, and then deal with it next week. Okay. So you'll come back next week. Shanaz then to just look at the program and tell us just
So in terms of the program then next week we will defer those consideration of the report after we look at the part of the report for next week then together with a DST brief on the FA research infrastructure roadmap. And the National Integrated Fiber Infrastructure System. So that meeting will also take place next week. I'm sure it's in the same venue. The problem was with the following week. As for the parliamentary program, was put for committees. So I had initially put the DST to brief up our first quarter financial or quarterly report. And then flash, we could, if members of feel, we could do maybe an oversight with our recent take focus. So we still need to decide on that. The problem with the DST or the challenge that they had, they've written to the chairperson and it said that the report, the first quarter, they would ideally like to present at the end of September, which kind of throw us out. Then either the committee must make a decision to to accept the request to consider the first quarter being with, when we deal with the annual report in this instance, or to ask him to present the first quarter report almost like a preliminary, because they say all the information at that time would not have been not verified, what is it? So that was the issue that we deal with in the last week. I'm not sure if people have the energy for a visit or to be just accept the
what week is that?
That is the week of the 10th to the 14th of the 10th. Well, yeah. It's like a magic. I think that we have to think about.
That is the last week before
that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think I'll be in that land hearing thing tied up that whole week for public hearings. But you know, yes, I'm comfortable if you want to do something. What do you suggest to me?
I was looking at this, like, for this committee, I think the outstanding stuff that we didn't focus on weeks and stuff, I think we didn't do some of the honest symposium, like launchpad type stuff, with the Hermanus, like, with the center we didn't do, and then there was some of the silent wash stuff that we also didn't do, the agri kind of, bioscience kind of things that we had. But would you prefer to do an oversight or just have one meeting in the week and then let the DSC come to itself on a third quarter provisional or we can do a oversight that maybe just take 2 days out and do something that might have one and make it
challenge.
My meeting is, we're waiting for the service provider, so we will need to next week, so we will get a good indication, but at this stage, I'm not sure.
Sometimes to understand also the Western case. I don't have a problem with that. My concern is also basically with the department's report to squeeze it in and stuff that it's sort of like a bygone thing in the annual report session is coming up. So this is my wider way to leave this acting. Even if it means we have to have a day before we come in and we have their thing, and then the next day we can then discuss the annual report.
Okay, so I think it's the first quarter.
Thank you, Chair. I don't have a problem, but I'm not going to be available. Because I'm going with telecommunication.
So maybe let's have the preliminary first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The first quarter.
You also noted it, isn't it? But we formally like it and teach it. But they should give us a preliminary report, and then at the end of September, then when they finalize and audit it, then they can verify the information.
Yeah.
Okay. So can we adopt the revised program? We adopt the revised program as like the editor for next week and other.
I'm going to
remember the end of the meeting.